Good morning. This week, in my preparation for this lesson, I came across a quotation from a man named Seneca the Younger. He was a famous Roman politician and Stoic philosopher. And he said something that I haven't been able to get out of my mind all week. He said this. It's going to come up on the screen. He said, "It's not the man who has too little, but the man who craves more that is poor." It's not the man who has too little, but the man who craves more that is poor. And I just want to ask you this morning, do you believe that? I mean, do you really believe that? I mean, in American culture, we don't act like that. And so I think we really have to kind of assess for ourselves this morning whether or not we actually believe that that is true. Now, some of us in the room who kind of fashion ourselves as poor, or we believe that we are not as well off, we might look at that and go, yeah, I think that's true, all right? But the truth of the matter is, he said that almost 2,000 years ago. I find it fascinating that at the same time Seneca the Younger was living in Rome, churning out philosophical nuggets like this, Jesus was alive at the same time, 1,400 miles or so away in a little area of the world known as Israel, churning out stories that sound very similar. You see, Jesus and Seneca lived at the same time, and while I'm sure they would have disagreed on many things, they were of the same mind about this. And I believe that's true because of a little story that comes out of Luke chapter 12. You see, I can almost imagine it. Jesus is in the last year of his ministry, and he's heading toward Jerusalem, toward his final act of sacrifice, dying on the cross. And on his way, he's stopping at villages and towns, and he's talking to people, and he's teaching people, and he's calling people to follow him along the way. And in one such village, Jesus has attracted quite a crowd. Luke 12:1 says, "Meanwhile, when a crowd of many thousands had gathered," so Jesus rolls into town and thousands of people show up, "so that they were trampling on one another, Jesus began to speak," and speak he did. He began by challenging his listeners to be even better behaviorally than the religious elite in the culture known as the Pharisees by avoiding their hypocrisy. And he goes on to challenge his audience to be prepared to be persecuted for following him. You see, despite the fact that Jesus hadn't died yet, he knew that he had enemies. He knew the day was coming where not only he, but everyone listening to him that truly decided to follow him would end up being hunted, persecuted, even killed in some cases. And so he's preparing them for the difficult realities ahead for anyone who is going to follow him. And Jesus is in the middle of this discussion, and he's laying all this out, and all of a sudden a dude runs up and goes, "Jesus, I know you're in the middle of something here, but I got a problem and I need you to help me." Totally interrupts Jesus in the middle of this discussion. I'm not kidding. He just jumps in the middle. Starting at Luke chapter 12, verse 13, check this out. Someone in the crowd runs up and says, "Jesus, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Really? I mean, Jesus is in the middle of telling people, "You might get killed for following me, so kind of be prepared for that." And this guy runs up to try to get Jesus involved in a domestic dispute. Seriously, what's going on? Now, scholars have studied and written about this passage, and they're kind of split on what's exactly going on. You see, in the Jewish culture, the oldest brother got a double portion of inheritance as opposed to any other brother in the family. All right, so if I'm the oldest brother, which I am, this is working out nicely, I get double. All right, my younger brother gets half of what I get. All right, and so some scholars believe that what happened is that this guy is running up to Jesus for justice, right? And so he's coming up to Jesus like, "Jesus, my other brother took the double portion of the inheritance, and then he took mine too, so I'm seeking justice." But most scholars tend to believe, based on where the story goes from here, that he wasn't looking for justice, he was jealous. And he was coming to Jesus and saying, "You know what? My brother's got a double portion, and I'd like a bigger cut. So Jesus, could you help me out?" All right, now whether he was seeking justice or jealousy, either way, Jesus responds pretty clearly. He says, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbiter between you?" Jesus is like, "I'm not getting in the middle of your problem. I'm not trying, like, I'm not going to do this. But since you asked, let me go ahead and tell you what I think is going on. And Jesus proceeds to teach this man and everyone else in the entire audience a lesson. He says this. Then he said to them, "Watch out. Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed." See, he's looking at this guy and he's going, "I think greed might be an issue for you." So he says, "I want everybody listening to me to watch out for all kinds of greed, because life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." Wow. You see, he's looking at this guy and everyone else in the audience, and he's saying, "Watch out, because you can justify greed and rationalize covetousness really easily." And then he told them this parable. "The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest." Now, you've got a rich guy. He's already rich. Okay, he's got field, he's got land, he's rich, he's wealthy, especially in that culture at the time. And he does what he does every year. He plants his fields. All right, and every year he takes in a harvest. Only this year, that harvest is huge. It's huge. That word abundant implies this massive, massive return. Now, he's already rich, and he has an abundant harvest so incredible that it becomes evident that he will never have to work again. He'll never have to work again. But this unexpected bounty creates a little bit of a problem for him. You see, he thought to himself, "What shall I do? I mean, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Well, this is a problem, right? I mean, I've got no place for all this stuff. I've got these barns, and they're still full of some of last year's grain, and now I have this giant harvest. I'm never going to have to work again. What am I going to do? Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns, and I'll build bigger ones. And there I will store up my surplus grain, and I'll say to myself, 'Self, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, be merry.'" Right? This guy has effectively achieved what we know as the American dream. Right? Work hard, accumulate wealth, retire early, live out your days with ease. Right? This is what we call it. This is the American dream. This is everybody's dream. And that's exactly what he intends to do. But when you think about it, it's kind of a selfish perspective to some degree. Look at his language. Just real quick, look at his language. "This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain." You see, he's looking at this gigantic harvest, this massive return on his investment of crops, and he's saying, "This is mine." He's looking at it like it's all his, and it's all for him and him alone. And then Jesus brings this story to a foreboding close. He says this, "But God comes to the man and says, 'You fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you.'" In other words, he's going to die. "Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?" And then he says this, which I think is a little bit concerning. Challenging, scary, maybe. He says, "This is how it will be with whoever." All right, that word means anyone, right? "This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God." You see, Jesus makes it clear that the rich man's perspective is both selfish, foolish, and short-sighted. You see, the man is placing his entire hope and security in that which cannot benefit him for one second after he's dead. And I think Jesus is looking at us, a bunch of Americans, sitting in a really nice room 2,000 years later, and he's saying, "What are you going to do with what you have?" Because regardless of the way we may feel, the simple fact of owning a car or owning a home or even walking around with change in your pocket makes you and I among the wealthiest people on the face of the entire planet. So what will we do with the resources that God has allowed us to have? You see, Jesus in this story, I believe, is giving us the sense that there are three approaches to how we can handle money. Right? The first two we know pretty well in our culture, and we see in the main character, actually, both of these two main tendencies. All right? Both of these two main tendencies. The first way that you and I can handle money is to be a spender. All right? It's to be a spender. I mean, we know what this looks like, right? It's that tendency that lives inside of all of us to spend what we get on what we want. Now, the emphasis for the spender is consumption, right? I'm going to consume. What money I make, or what the guy in the story had the barns full of grain, my intention is to consume what I have. In other words, we buy things, we chase fun and expensive experiences, much like the guy in the story. He has this vast wealth, and rather than thinking about anybody else, his plan is to eat, drink, and be merry. In other words, live it up. Have fun. And when you think about it, a spender is really a person who is we would look at this person, they're not investing. Well, they actually are investing. They're just investing in now. They're investing in now. I'm not too worried about later. Let's have fun with the money we have while we have it, right? Many spenders, what they do is they actually limit saving in order to spend. So they limit their saving to spend. And their motivation at its core, when you really dig down inside of it, is enjoyment. It's hey, I'm going to enjoy life. Enjoy life. And when you think about it, and I have this week, spending money is really quite fun. Is it not? I mean, come on, think about it. Eating out at restaurants with food we like is fun. My wife and I are what we call self-described foodies. Okay, we have an app on our phone that tells us where the nearest good gluten-free restaurant is. All right, all I got to do, wherever I am, doesn't matter. If I'm in the United States of America, whoop, whoop, and I know where to go get good food. All right, this is I love spending money on good food. All right, going on vacations to exotic locales, fun. Having large parties, hanging out with friends, fun. Blowing big bucks on Ohio State football games, me first, please. Yep, absolutely. Fun. It's fun. And I'm not saying there's anything inherently wrong with any of these things, but the truth of the matter is, this guy in the story settled for a life of pure selfish enjoyment. And many in our culture do. We see movies and sports stars blowing millions on lavish lifestyles. I mean, the cultural meme, right, has become Nicolas Cage, right? This guy who's made millions on movies, millions and millions on movies, and he's done crazy dumb stuff that makes him, like, have no money now, like buy two islands in the Bahamas or a random, like, dinosaur skull. Like, it's really weird stuff. Like, if you research it, it's really actually kind of fun to see the random ways that celebrities blow their money. And we look at these people and we go, that's really stupid, and we think we're different. But many of us do the same thing, just on a smaller scale. Because the truth of the matter is, a shopping spree is a shopping spree, whether it happens at Saks Fifth Avenue or Walmart. All right, and dinners out are always more expensive than dinners at home, whether you're going to the precinct or the Waffle House. All right, this is just true. So it's all a matter of degree. You see, the story presents us with the spender, and we see that in Eat, Drink, and Be Merry, right? But the story also presents us in the same guy with the other mindset that we're already used to in our culture, and that is the mindset of the saver. Now, the saver is different, right? You see, unlike the spender whose focus is on enjoying things now, the saver's emphasis is on accumulation, right? I'm going to accumulate as much wealth as possible. This is the guy straining with every paycheck to max out his 401k, or the woman who's setting aside every dime because, you know what, I'm going to retire at 50. Yes, right? Think about the guy in the story, right? He's got a problem. He's got barns. And they're already full. And he's got a giant, abundant, overwhelming crop. What's he going to do with it? tear down his barns and build bigger ones. I'm going to hoard all that I have. This is a pure saver move. Rather than investing in now, no, the saver invests in later. Right? Instead of choosing to limit their saving, no, they limit their spending so that they can save more, so that they have more to use and spend later. All right, this is that saver mindset. And what's important to note about the saver is really their motivation. All right, when you dig down into it, what drives a saver? It's a mindset of security. All right, in other words, if I accumulate enough wealth, you can see it in the guy's words. He said, if I just build bigger barns and I store all this stuff, I'll be able to live scot-free for the rest of my life. I don't have to worry about anything. I've got it all. If I just have enough, no matter what, I'll be provided for. No matter how long I live, no matter what might happen, I'm okay. Thus, money or stuff, rather than God, has become the man's security. And what I find fascinating, see, the interesting thing about this story is that we can all look at the spender, right? We can all look at the person who's randomly blowing big bucks on weird things and we can go, wow, you're an idiot. But the saver, good on you, man. You're 45 and that 401k already says 2 million. Good for you. We would never even dream about questioning a person who has been that wise. And yet Jesus looks at this man who exhibits both tendencies and says, you're a fool. You're a fool. He calls both perspectives foolish. But what else is there, right? I mean, when it comes to money and it comes to resources in our culture, you can either spend it or you can save it. Now, if you want to get into semantics with me about investing, that's just saving on a long-term scale, right? You can either spend it or you save it, right? There's really only two perspectives. I believe with this story, Jesus is offering us a third path, and that's the perspective of the servant. You see, unlike the spender who believes that money exists to serve them now, and the saver who believes that the money secures them for later, Jesus indicates that the purpose of money is to serve God and others. In other words, it was God that allowed this man to have that giant harvest. It was God that gave that man the skills and the opportunities to bring in that giant harvest, and it's the same for you and for me. It's an investment that he has made in us. And he expects there to be a return for his kingdom. He expects there to be a return on that investment for the poor. You remember in Dad's lesson last week, he indicated that serving the poor in our world is a moral requirement for followers of Christ. Notice the phrase, this is how it will be for anyone who is not rich toward God. You see, the problem was that Jesus did not condemn the man because God was generous with him. All right, be very clear. There was nothing wrong with the giant harvest. It was God blessing this man. Jesus condemned the guy for not going in reverse by blessing God with what God had already given him. In the end, he looked at that harvest and he said, "It's mine." I believe Jesus calls each of us through this story to consider the third alternative, right? Using our money to serve God, because the emphasis for a servant is different than a spender or a saver. Rather than consumption or accumulation, the emphasis for the servant is generosity. This is summed up in our focus verse for this lesson series. It's Acts 20:35. It's going to come up on the screens. What I want us to do is I want us to all recite this together. All right, here we go. It is more blessed to give than to receive. Let's say it again. Here we go. It is more blessed to give than to receive. You see, a person who approaches their finances as a servant lives to be generous to God and others. They believe that their wealth comes from God and that we are duty-bound to bless God and others with it. In this way, their investment is neither in now nor in later, but rather in eternity. Jesus said something pretty fascinating in Matthew chapter 6. He said, "Don't store up treasures here on earth where moths eat them and rust destroys them, where thieves break in and steal. No, store your treasures in heaven where moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal." He said, in other words, don't pile it up for yourself in this life, because when you die, that's gone. Instead, utilize what you have in this life to make it possible for others to experience eternity with God. In other words, Jesus says the only investment that can possibly last is our investment in eternity. Once that money is spent, it is gone. And even if we save it, it's gone the minute we die, as this story graphically portrays. So to truly be a servant, our mindset has to shift, and we have to be willing to limit both our spending and our saving to give. All right, so that point there on your outline is limit spending and saving to give. Rather than focusing all of our resources on ourselves, we focus some of our resources on serving God and others. Ultimately, what motivates a servant is not enjoyment in the present or future or security for years to come, but that final point there is to simply serve God. Right? To serve God. That's the motivation of a servant. In every part of their lives, every day, including their financial situation. So the question that I want us to grapple with this morning, all right, is what are you? Are you a spender? Are you a saver? Or are you a servant? Now, I know you people, okay? All right? And I know that many of you are Christians, and you know that the right answer is C, all right? But if you were honest with you, just as I have had to really be honest with me in preparing this lesson this week, you know that you, and I know that I, am something else, okay? All right? We realize, however, that this story teaches us that the call of a Christian is to be a servant with our resources. Right? Because the truth of the matter is, and we have to remember this, all right? You can't get through this life without spending money. All right? So you have to be, to some degree or another, a spender, right? I mean, come on, I can't stand up here and reasonably tell you, well, you just shouldn't spend any money. That's impossible. All right? You all climbed in a car to some, I'm assuming, except one person. I saw one person walking here this morning. All right? But all the rest of you, you drove in a car. A car costs money. And you know what? You need transportation, because I'd really like for all of you to keep coming. All right? All right? So you need to spend some money, right? You have to buy food. You have to buy clothes, because everybody would really like you to wear clothes. All right? All right? We have to spend money. There is no way that you can get through life to some degree or another without being a spender. And the Bible tells us that we would be really stupid if we go through life and never save anything. Check this out. It's Proverbs chapter 21, verse 20. All right, the wise have wealth and luxury because they save some, but fools spend whatever they get. In other words, that money's gone the minute they get it. So, hey, you probably ought to save something. So you've got reality telling us that to some degree or another we have to be a spender, and you've got the Bible telling you, you know, you probably ought to save something, because that's just wise. So how can we be a spender and a saver and still fall in line with this call of Jesus to be a servant? How do we do that? How can we put that together? So what I want to do with the rest of our time this morning is I just want to give you some really practical tips, some really effective ways for becoming a servant in a context where you still have to be both a spender and you should be a saver too. All right, because it's hard, it's a balancing act, and none of us has all the answers, and trust me, none of us does this perfectly. All right? So if we're going to develop the heart of a servant with our finances, we have to start in one particular place, and that's the area of serving, aka generous giving. All right? And what I want you to think about, and again, like I said, these are going to be really practical tips. You can take them or leave them. It's up to you. All right, and we're going to move really quickly through this section because there's a lot to cover, but just hang in there with me. The first thing I think you ought to do, because trust me, I've tried to work through this in my own life as well, is to set a minimum giving amount based on your income as a starting place. A minimum giving amount based on your income as a starting place. You know, one example that we find in the Bible is 10%. All right. In other words, before you make any other financial decisions, before you worry about the car or the insurance or the house or anything else, before you buy food or anything, determine a minimum amount during your monthly, you know, plan or whatever that you are going to give. Now, why is this important? Because let's just be honest, if you start with giving, it makes sure that it happens. If your plan is to, hey, I'll give whatever's left over, there won't be any, and you'll never get to it. All right, when my wife and I, trust me, we make our own set of mistakes, but when my wife and I start our budget nowadays, right, the first line at the top is tithe, and we have that number. It comes out on the first of the month. All right, so it's automatically debited, you know, to the first of the month, and it comes right out here to serve all this stuff. All right, and that amount of money, first line on the deal. All right, why? Because we have to build the rest of our budget around that number. All right, we know how much we make, and it's the first expense going out every month. First, every single month, first it gets automatically pulled, and so we have to deal with that reality for the rest of the month. All right? So what kind of guidelines are there to give? Now, in the Old Testament law, as is up there right now, all right, there was a concept known as the tithe, which was a 10% gift of one's harvest or income that was specifically intended for serving the worship of God and taking care of others in the community. But if you actually read the Old Testament super clearly, there was not one but three tithes commanded for the people of Israel. Ultimately, when you add it all up, the average Jew would give away approximately 23% of their income. Now, before I freak anyone out, okay? All right? Before I freak you out, we are not Jews, all right? And we are not responsible for fulfilling all of the Old Testament rules and obligations. Okay, let me just be clear about that right up front. But the guidance, however, is clear, because I think many of us that grew up in church came away with this idea that if I can just get to a place where I give 10%, I get to hang on to all the rest. I get to do whatever I want with all the rest. Hey, God, I tithe. It's all mine now. And that's the wrong perspective to walk into if we want to be generous of spirit and a servant heart. Saying, well, I do a 10% tithe, so it's all mine, is the wrong attitude if we want to approach life from the servant standpoint. So what I want to do this morning is I want to walk through the rest of the time from the example of the average median income Highland Countyan. All right, some of you are going to fall well above this number. Some of you might fall below it. All right, but the truth of the matter is this is median level income in Highland County, okay? So in Highland County, all right, The median level income is $40,000 a year, all right? $40,000 a year, all right? That averages out to $3,333.33 of income per month, all right? So if you're the average Highland County and you have determined that you believe God is calling you to be generous of spirit, all right? And you know what? I'm gonna make the tithe my starting spot. In other words, you know, because you don't have to do 10%, but you know what, I'm going to do 10%. That's $4,000 a year, $333.33 a month. What I'm left with is $36,000 to live on. Now, there may be some of you guys out there saying, JD, you know what, that's not me. There's no way at this time I could give nearly that amount. You know what, okay. Right, like I said, guys, we're not Jews. We're not responsible for falling into all these Old Testament regulations. But what I will encourage you to do and what I will press you on is do something. Determine an amount. It may not be 10%. Maybe it's 5%. Maybe it's 3%. Maybe it's 7. I don't know. Whatever it is for you, determine that amount and determine to give it up front. All right? Choose how you will then live on the rest. All right, now let's talk about how we approach saving from a servant mindset. Because like I said, all right, we're going to end up spending money. We ought to save some, but giving is that priority. So we started there. All right, now we're going to move on to savings. Set a minimum saving amount based on your income as a starting place. For example, most financial people will tell you you need to be at least setting aside 10%. All right? Similar to giving, plan a minimum amount that you will save. This is just wise. All right, because the truth is you do actually not know what's going to happen, and it is wise not to be so overextended with your spending that you can't respond when there's a specific need. Now, there's a couple types of saving that I want to talk about this morning. The first is an emergency fund. All right, most financial consultants will encourage you to do typically 3 to 6 months of all of your regular monthly bills in savings so that in case you lose your job or your car goes on the fritz or something else catastrophic happens, you have a fire or something, you know, like you need to have at least 3 to 6 months of expenses set aside so that you know you can respond to that. All right. So let's just say you're that average Highland Countyan and your expenses on a monthly basis come out to about $2,000. All right, now, again, maybe some of you have expenses way more than that. Some of you maybe have expenses less. But let's just say just kind of in that average Highland County and range, you're about $2,000. An emergency fund of 3 months would be $6,000. Okay, so if you follow this process, all right, and you start with your $40,000 a year and you decide, you know what, I'm going to be a generous giver, and so I'm going to do the 10% giving, all right, and then I'm going to be a wise saver, I'm going to do the 10%, what's left, all right, is $32,000 to live on in the annual year, all right? So you've got the median household income of 40, you choose to be generous, then you choose to be wise, now you've got this amount left. All right, if you save at that $333 a month toward that emergency fund, you'll have a full emergency fund in 18 months, all right? 18 months from now, you could have an emergency fund set aside that just says, boom. You know, like, I'm just going to sit there and leave it there, and you know what? If something bad happens, I'm ready to roll. Okay, this is possible. We can do that. All right, now the second type of savings is typically the issue of retirement. Many of us realize that someday we will likely stop working, and setting aside a fixed amount into a retirement account, whether it's a 401k or a Roth or some other kind of retirement instrument, is a wise move that will allow you to prepare for life after your greatest years of income have passed. With that said, to be a servant, we have to consider something else, all right? And I want to stop before I give you this next point, because there are going to be some of you that want to write me off before we ever get to it, all right? Dad gave a statistic a couple of weeks ago that said that 70% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, which means that probably 70 or so percent of the people sitting in this room are in the same boat. You're not saving nearly enough for retirement. You're not saving for your emergency fund. And you know what? Some of this that I'm about to say, you're going to look at me and go, JD, you're crazy. And I get that. But some of us in this room today are not in that situation. All right, and this point is specifically for some of you that are in that situation. If we want to be a servant with our savings, specifically our long-term savings, we need to think about setting a maximum limit based on our expected future needs, after which the rest will be given away. All right, now, hear me on this. This is super countercultural. If you go to any financial planner, the last thing that you'll ever hear them say is that you should cap your wealth. All right? I'm flying in the face of all modern financial advice. I'm well aware of that. All right? You never know what could happen. Life could change, and that's true. But we have to ask ourselves the question, is Jesus our security or is our accumulated wealth? Because Jesus had some pretty strong things to say about this man's plan to save and spend and save and spend and save and spend in perpetuity. All right, the guy had huge savings set aside. He invested none of it in other people or taking care of the needs of the people around him. All right? Now, let me just ask you, what if you were the average Highland Countyan, all right, What if you were the average Highland Countian and you wanted to look at what you would need to live for 20 years or so, investing toward that benchmark, and then if you ever actually achieve that goal, you give the rest away? I'm not saying you have to, but Jesus is clearly not a fan of this dude's unlimited savings plan. All right, and if we're going to be clear about walking with Jesus in every area of our life, we probably ought to think about this. All right, so let's just say you're the median income Highland Countian. All right, and you're planning, right? You're thinking, okay, I want to hit 65 and stop working. All right, and I want to at least guarantee myself to live for 20 years on the exact same level of income I was making before. Not crazy, live it up, not nothing, you know, anything like that. So if I'm the average Highland Countian, I'm pulling in $3,333 of income per month. All right? If you multiply that by 12 months in a year, and then you multiply that by 20 years, if you want to retire and live that way, you need $800,000 of accumulated savings by the time you hit 65 in order to do that. Now, some of you guys, like I'm telling you, you're breathing a deep breath in right now because you're freaking out and going, there is no way. And you know what? I get that. I do get that. All right. But if that's what you want, that's what you need. Okay? Now, let's flip this around a little bit. Say you're the average Highland Countian, but you've been pretty smart, and you've invested really well, and you are saying, you know what, hey, I want to hit that goal of 800,000, and you know what, if I hit that 800,000 by the time I'm 65, that is what I need. That is what I need. But you've been really smart and you've invested really well, and all of a sudden you hit 55 and you begin doing the projections, and all of a sudden you realize that by the time that you hit 65, you're going to end up with $1.3 million in that investment account. And your total wealth assets is going to be $1.3 million instead of that $800,000 that you said you were going to need. What would it look like for you to draw a financial finish line that said, you know what? I trust God, and I've given this to Him, and I'm going to draw a finish line at a million. All right? I'm done saving at a million. I said I needed 800,000, and God has blessed me, and you know what? I'm drawing a line in the sand. A million's all I need. What does that mean? It means that you might possibly hit 65 years old with $300,000 available for kingdom investment. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine what $300,000 in the life of the poor and impoverished in Highland County would do? Can you imagine how many children in Haiti that could sponsor? Can you imagine how many schools that could build in impoverished countries around the world? Can you imagine what a church of this size and this talent and capacity could do with that kind of resource? Can you imagine the potential impact of making a decision like that? Now, granted, I know. Most of us in this room are not in that boat. All right, and there are some of you screaming at me in your brains right now saying, JD, that will never be me. And you know what? That's okay. All right, that's fine. But what would it look like at whatever level of income you are to consider capping your savings and putting your security in God and not wealth and choosing to bless others? Now, guys, there are many of us in this room for whom something like this is just going to be completely, there's no way, we're not ever going to get to that. You know what? Okay, but there are some of us in this room for whom this is not only a possibility but an extreme likelihood. All right, there are some of us in this room for whom that number might be small. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, what are we going to do with the rest of that money? What are we going to do with all that we don't need? We don't actually need. The money that we just pile up because, just in case. And then we get to our deathbed, and then somebody else gets it, rather than us being able to have the joy of making a giant impact on God's kingdom and the people around us. Guys, if you want to be a servant, You have to start by setting a baseline minimum that you will give and then save reasonably within limits. Within limits. But finally, we have to consider what it looks like to handle spending like a servant. Obviously, as we've gone through this, you saw that we started spender, saver, servant. But as we've been going through this planning discussion, we've gone servant, saver, and then spending, because I believe with all my heart that our priorities have to go in that order. All right? Now, just by doing this exercise, all right? Just by doing this exercise, creating a budget for yourself where you say, you know what, I'm going to be generous, and you know what, I'm going to save, and you know what, 10% isn't the big deal. If you can't do 10%, I don't care. That's not my problem. That's between you and God. But do something in both of these categories. And then what you have effectively done just by doing this exercise is you have created a spending max limit, all right, based on your current income that is beneath your current income. It's critical, right? And guys, some of this, I mean, you're probably looking at me going, JD, that's just common sense, all right? Unless you're the United States federal government, you actually do have to spend less than you make, right? Our government doesn't seem to think so, but we, however, are not the federal government. And if someone in here decides not to follow this advice and spend more than they make, then there are going to be real consequences in your life. And unfortunately, that's happening for a lot. Common sense isn't so common today. A recent study, get this, of over 25,000 Americans, a recent study of 25,000 Americans said that only 41% spend less than they earn. Only 41% of people actually spend less than they make. That's insanity. Two out of every five, all right, 19%, all right, or one out of every five spend more than they make. Guys, one out of every five people is headed toward bankruptcy in the United States of America. And what that means is that the number between those is all the people who expend right literally up to the nose of what they make. Guys, that's crazy. You don't need to be a financial guru to realize that spending more than you make or spending right up to what you make will get you in trouble really quickly if you ever have a problem. And credit card companies don't care why you spent more than you can pay. They just expect you to pay it back with exorbitant interest. But guys, the point isn't just about spending less than you make. The point is about being intentional about spending less than you make. You see, it requires us to specifically look at our life and our income and our situation and to put a cap on our spending. If you follow the above exercise, right, that exercise where you lay out, okay, this is what I make, this is what I'm going to give, this is what I'm going to save. If you just do that, you have effectively done this. You've effectively created a plan. But this exercise does clearly require you to differentiate between wants and needs. You have to differentiate between wants and needs. Yes, you all need transportation. But what kind of car does it need to be and how much does it have to cost? Yes, you all need a place to live. You need a place to live. You need a roof over your head. It's winter in Ohio. You need a place to live. But how big does the house need to be and how much does it need to cost? Yes, you need to go get groceries, but does it have to be brand name everything? Yes, if you're young and in this room today, you may, I will not say you must, but you may need a college education. You might. Some of you may not. And you know what? That's just fine. But at the end of the day, does it have to strap you with 10 plus years of debt payoff? Think about these things. Actually ask these questions. All right? I can't answer them for you. I'm in no position to judge what you guys do and the decisions that you make. But at the end of the day, at least think about them. You have to answer them for yourselves. One question that may be helpful to you in this process, and it's a question that I think that Jesus would encourage us to ask, is what choices will allow me to invest in eternity? What choices will truly allow me to invest in eternity? In other words, what spending choices will set me up to have the greatest possible return on God's investment in me? All right, now, some of you may not know this about me, but I can be a TV junkie, okay? If I'm in a room with you and there is a TV on, you might as well not be there, all right? I'm sorry, it's just the truth. All right, I went out to lunch with my mom a couple of years ago. I just took her out to lunch. We went out to Pizza Hut, and I picked the wrong seat in the booth. All right, it was the seat not under the TV, but across the table facing the TV. It was a waste of her time to be there. And you know what was on? A soap opera without the sound, right? Like, I don't watch this stuff. I don't care about these people, right? I don't care about the drama and who's pregnant and who cheated. I don't care. But here I was, like, watching this in the Pizza Hut, and I couldn't take my eyes off of it. All right, I know this about me. So 10 years ago, when I moved out of my parents' house, I made the decision I wasn't going to have TV. I just said, you know what? I'm not going to do it because I know I'm going to waste hours and hours and hours of my life staring at this thing. All right, now, granted, I'm not telling you to go home and cut your cable. I'm not telling you to elbow your wife and say, see, you know, like, I'm not doing that, okay? All right, you make your own decisions. But for me, that was the decision I made. In fact, if you talk to my wife, she thought it was kind of weird that I didn't have TV, all right? But, you know, she moved in, and after a while, she didn't miss it, and she said, okay, you know, we don't have to get this. But over the course of my time of living outside of my parents' home, I haven't calculated it out specifically, but based on the kind of packages I would have bought because I would have gotten ESPN, I can guarantee it, I've saved somewhere in the neighborhood of $5,000 to $10,000. All right, some of that has blessed this place. Some of that has gone to help people in our lives that just needed a little help. All right, now I'm not propping myself up as some great example, all right? Cutting TV out of your life is a relatively low-impact decision, frankly, all right? Not nearly as high-impact as like limiting your savings or something like that. All right, but the truth of the matter is it was a decision that I made that allowed me to invest in eternity with money I wouldn't have had if I had bought TV, all right? God has blessed you and I with resources and talents, and some of that is to make money. Some of you in this room, he will put into positions to make large amounts of money. Some of you will make a rather more modest existence. All right, but either way, what choices allow you to be most useful to the kingdom and to serve those around you who are poor and in need? You see, just as with the above questions, I can't answer these for you, and it's really your call. You have to take it to God, but I would encourage you to at least think about going to God and asking, instead of telling God how you want to live, rather going to him and asking him to tell you what to spend. Finally, when your income increases, I would encourage you to reevaluate by asking, how much of this new money do I really need to keep or spend? Guys, a raise is a good thing. All right, a huge bump in your 401k is a great thing. Just ask the president. He'll tell you all about it. All right? But if you set limits for yourself, ask how much of the new money you need to keep or spend. Just ask the question. All right, I'm not saying that you can't keep it all. I'm not saying that God maybe in some cases wouldn't say, you know what, you guys just need that. All right? I'm not saying that. But at least ask the question. How much do I need to keep? You see, I have no doubt that there may be situations where God says, you know what, use it all. All right, but always keep in mind this bottom line. At the end of your life, it won't matter how much is left in your retirement or how much money you've spent. The truth is this: limited saving and spending makes unlimited impact possible. Limited saving and spending makes unlimited impact possible. You see, by putting self-imposed limits on your spending and your saving, you make it possible for God to have tremendous impact in the church and tremendous impact in the poor and in our community around us. Don't miss out because you've never considered it possible that God might ask you to put a lid on what you save or spend. Don't get to the end of your life and wonder if the resources that God invested in you could have had a bigger impact. Now, guys, I don't know what your next step is this week. All right, maybe for some of you that next step is just to figure out what it might mean to be a follower of Jesus. All right, you just need to discover who Jesus is and you want to figure that out. If that's you, all right, there's a box on the back of your communication card that says, hey, I have some spiritual questions. I'd like to get some answers. All right, if that's you, please turn that communication card in and either Dad or I or somebody else in the office will get with you and will help you answer those spiritual questions so you can make a determination as to whether or not you're going to follow Christ with your life. All right. Frankly, if you're in this room today and you're not a Christian, you're probably going, what? All right. Because if you're not a Christian and you don't believe that you can trust Jesus with everything in your life, some of this stuff sounds crazy. All right. Maybe your next step this week is to call Gary Lewis and to say, you know what? I'm going to sign up for the Freed Up Financial class because you know what? I need some help. Guys, one of the unfortunate facts of our culture is that money has become a taboo. You can't talk about it with people. You can't share with people when you're having a tough time. You can't reach out and get help because if God knows, if anybody knows that I need help, oh, it's going to be terrible, right? There's this taboo around money that makes no sense. All right, if you could get better at it, if you can reach out to somebody and get some help, by all means, do it. A class like this does require a little bit of financial transparency. You got to actually walk through some of the decisions that you make. All right, but how much more impact could you make with your life by making a decision to get better with the resources that God has given you? All right, some of us make it. For some of us, it's no big deal to walk into the office of a financial planner and have them sit down and give us some feedback about how we could build better wealth. All right, but for some of us, it's terrifying beyond all reason to think about sitting down with somebody and going, hey, I need some help. And that's just crazy, guys. At the end of the day, you and I have an opportunity to make a massive impact on our world. Choose to make the impact by limiting yourself in other areas. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for this day and we thank you for this time that we've had to be in your presence. We thank you for the joy that we've had in learning from you, in hearing your word spoken. And God, these are tough issues and these are big questions and these are challenging discussions. And Lord, I'm not good at all this stuff. And I can be real honest in front of you, Father, and say that there are times when I fall very much into those spender or saver categories. But God, those of us in this room today that want to follow you, we need to be better, and we pray that you would teach us how through this lesson today and that you would prompt us to make better decisions. And Father, if there's someone in the room today that's just shocked at what they're hearing because you know, this is what Christians actually believe, God, I pray that they will be challenged to realize and that the world will be challenged to realize that Christians ought not be a people that just spend and save forever, but rather to be a people that choose to make a giant impact on our world. I pray for that, Father. Pray for your wisdom to guide us in every aspect of our lives. It's in Jesus' name we pray all these things. Amen.